spray pump in the morning. Smell! You know that gasoline smell? Smells like...
Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million...
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world, and I am a material girl or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke. Don't do
if I had
Well, North Bay Stacks and Jacks, I'm somehow at Burn on the board. SP Futures up 91. Yeah, 91. NASDAQ Futures up 593 as we are celebrating this alleged deal with Iran. It's not going to get signed until Friday. It'll be interesting to see if the Israelis go with it. Calls for essentially the opening of the Strait of Hormuz by Iran, us stopping any kind of blockades we were doing on their stuff. They can sell their oil again, I guess. And the nuclear stuff's been put off for a while. So I'm not sure.
So nothing's been signed yet, officially?
No, Friday is the actual signing in Geneva. I don't know. Shouldn't sound like it was worth a war. It's kind of right where we started, but that's just me. But
right back where we started, yeah.
Yeah, maybe worse, but hopefully not. But the fact is, if it stops, I think everybody's happy. People stop getting killed. Let's stop spending all that money over there and get our people back out of harm's way and fix up our ships and recharge our ammunition and hopefully get back to normal and maybe Iran will behave for a while, which would be nice, too.
Do you think this is actually going to affect gas prices over here?
Yeah, it'll drop the gas prices for sure. I mean, today we've got oil's down $4, 80, 60. I paid $3.83 yesterday, and I was at the top. This is in the burbs. I paid $4.99, so it's down. Let me see where RBOB is $2.93. So throw 90, 80, 80 to 110 on that, depending on what state you're in. And you should be under $4 everywhere pretty soon, I think.
Sounds good to me.
By the way, RBOB is the wholesale price of gas in New York Harbor, for those that don't know that. But oil's down to 80.67. So the oil company's done exceptionally well. I don't think that people haven't made out like a bandit in this. Some people have, some people haven't. So, Matt, when John Flanagan piles in, throw him in. But until then... maybe I will tell you a little story because you're part of it. You're one of our nice producers. our friend and, he was on the show several times, Mr. Bill Moriarty, friend of mine since, like, high school. Saturday was quite the day for me, right? First of all, you know, a good friend that... Second of all, I guess, because I already said first of all once. You feel really weird when you lose track of somebody, you know, for, like, years... Then the first day you talk to the guy again, it's like it was never a gap, right? I mean, yeah. I'm sure you have friends like that.
Oh, definitely.
Because, you know, Bill and I went through it all, you know, high school, college again. In those days, let's put it this way. I know you and Andrew are buds, and, you know, you guys lived together in college and so forth. But it's the, you know, I'm not going to say things are different now, but in those days, people didn't have big houses, and people had big families. We didn't, but other people did. And you were never home. You were always out. You were always with your guys. I mean, the first thing you did was got home and got out of there as fast as you could and found a basketball game, a football game, or something. So, I mean, you're talking about... I mean, I was he went away. For those that don't know, Bill became a civil engineer, and he zeroed in on water treatment plants. Now, why, I don't know. Well, probably because the company here he originally went to work with, Cancer Townsend, which is a real old-line Chicago engineering firm, I think got bought by somebody, and I don't know, Bill was out, we're helping on a water treatment facility plant. I actually visited him out there, somewhere near Santa Cruz, California. And he just, you know, went, these are like 3 and 4 and 5 year jobs, right? So you really lose track of your homeland, you know. And so he went from there, I think, to Houston for a while, and then he went to Miami for a long while. Then he went to San Antonio. And that was kind of the last big one that he put in. And then he just consulted on other ones after that. But the he stayed in San Antonio because the city loved the guy. Mm. And they made him the chairman of whatever their committee on water treatment projects and water projects.
Wow.
And he stayed there. He joined the club, did some country club. He liked to golf. And did some consulting work on the side. And did a, you know, enjoyed himself. He loved it. And I guess I didn't realize it until Saturday, the water treatment plant they put up in Austin, Texas, is considered the seventh finest water treatment plant in the world.
Wow.
So they got a huge award and stuff. Yeah. So, but man, on a personal thing, the service is at St. Cajetan's, which is a parish just south of where I grew up. And, you know, it's where Bill grew up. So, we, you know, that's where we hung. But I'd never been in the place. So I show up and, of course, I don't know a soul, and it always feels weird when you're sort of in your own neighborhood and you see a bunch of 6'3 Irish guys walking around and you don't know anybody, right?
Yeah.
So I introduced myself to a couple people, and finally, we're at the back of the church. So finally this lady comes over, and I could tell she was a Moriarty because they all had the same kind of rounded face. And she says, my name is Mary Beth, not Moriarty, she's obviously married. And who are you? And I said, well, I'm Tom Howell. She goes, oh my God, you showed up. And I go, what do you mean? She says, you're Stocks and Jacks. And I go, yeah. She goes, we love Stocks and Jacks. We all listen.
Ah, she's a fan.
Unbelievable. She goes, ever since Bill got on there, we listened. He made everybody listen when he was on there. I said, we've never stopped listening. And she starts calling people over. Here he is. He showed up. I'm sitting there going, I, you know, I was stunned.
Yeah.
Just stunned. And so then I talked to a bunch of guys. Then there's a service. We went to a restaurant afterward, and I'm thinking, I don't know anybody here. I sit down at a table kind of by myself because nobody else there yet. All of a sudden, you know, there's people around, and we're talking about the show, and Bill's nephew, real nice guy. He listens all the time, likes every one of our guests. I'm going, you like all of them? He goes, and all of a sudden, I'm, you know, sitting there kind of holding court, and everybody knows all the people around the show.
Wow.
You would never guess. I mean, I was absolutely flattered. And finally, when this thing kind of breaks up, and Mary Beth walks over again, and she says, I just want to hug you one more time because you're like famous. I go, I'm not famous. What are you talking about? But I tell you what, we're meeting, and so Bill, for his last gasp, so sorry to see him gone, but now introduce me to his whole family, and maybe we'll keep in touch. And his son is in human resources. In some place, and he's going to come out and talk about. He says, I don't really know anything to talk about. I said, you sound like your old man. You'll be fine. I said, you know all about how people are recruiting with AI and all this other stuff, and how people are using AI. He goes, yeah. I says, nobody knows that.
Yeah.
You know, so we went in, and it was a amazingly sad day, but I ended up meeting, you know, 10, 15, 20 people I had never met, and the positive, I don't think outweighs the negative, but
definitely,
it's pretty positive. And what a great family! And you know, and the guy, you know, he's a terrific guy. Of course, I told a few stories from when he was younger, and everybody was aghast. I got one. He was telling me when his first job, well, one of his first jobs for Cancer Townsend was being a rod man on a surveying team. And so this is, you know, Schaumburg, you live not that far from Schaumburg.
Yeah.
Well, there was no Schaumburg. It was a bunch of swamps or pines and farms, right?
Oh, yeah.
So this is, we were in, I'm going to say if we weren't in high school, we were freshman year of college. And so Bill's got this old beat up great green Volkswagen. Of course, he never paid any tolls, right? In those days, there were no gates or anything. You reached out, and it was like 35 cents. So, of course, he never paid any tolls. So one day, cops are pulling everybody over way up north. They pull him over, and he goes, I drove down about 100 yards, figured the guy would be too lazy to come down and talk to me. So, of course, so the guy hot puts it down there, and he's not happy. So he says, what's the problem, officer? I goes, well, you didn't pay your toll. Oh, yeah, I did. So, of course, he's got a walkie-talkie. I don't know if in those days, they might not know if they still have it. Yeah. But below the basket is a little window. So if they want to, you know, stake the place out, they stick somebody down there in a window, and they can tell what you did. So the guy, subject an old beat-up gray Volkswagen, green Volkswagen, put his hand out as if to throw money in the thing, and, of course, he didn't. And so then Bill says to the guy, all right, you got me. And the guy says, well, we know we got you. And he says, well, you know, I'm what you call a flagrant violator, so I'm still ahead of the game. What are you talking about?
At least he's an honest violator.
Yeah, so he goes, I can run you in. He goes, that's okay, I get paid anyway. And he goes, here's your ticket. Shut up and get out of here. Just go.
Yeah.
And walk back to his squad car. But funny guy. Just but he really, you know, a few times he was on, really knew this water stuff. And I'm going to miss him as a friend. The show's going to miss him because, I mean, amazing knowledge, especially now that last week I woke up and I heard this thing about Corpus Christi maybe stopping their desalination plant, and I'm thinking, we got to call Bill. And I go, wait a minute, there is no Bill. You know, it's really weird when something like that happens.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
But
you said his nephew's right?
His son is in HR, and his nephew I think works for an insurance company.
Yeah, get both of them on if you can.
I'm going to.
Yeah,
we'll try, and I hope they will track us down. But there, I couldn't believe his sister. Oh yeah, we all listen. She starts calling people over. But you know, it's so strange, man. I show up and the place is loaded with big gray-haired Irish guys. There isn't anybody in a place less than 6'2", a few people maybe. It's just, I mean, the gene pool is just so different than if you go to a place downtown where everybody's, you know, 5'9", 125 pounds. You'd swear we're a different species.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, I was like the smallest guy in the place. And, and of course, I'm grilling his son. I go, were you as good a basketball player as your dad? Well, no, I was more into golf. So your dad was quite a player. The kid's like 6'5". And nice kid. And I guess he never really had a chance with this cancer. The only mistake he think was sort of made is he kept telling his urologist that he was very fatigued, and because his PSA level never got above 3, she never was concerned about cancer. So finally, they did some kind of a scan, and he was stage 4 before they even started.
Ah,
yeah. So he really didn't have any kind of a chance. Yeah. And which is a shame, but you know, he had a place, and I don't really have the time, but he found a place in Dingle, Ireland, which is the westernmost spot in Europe, evidently. It's the furthest west piece of Ireland is what he told me, and he got his Irish citizenship, and he must have found this lady over there that owned this place. His son told me, yeah, they had like 6 big bedrooms. It was right sort of on the beach. And he rented the place for a month. And there were a week or two where people from Austin went up there and his family. But you could go for 3-4 days, pile in, you know, have a good time. Evidently, the town is very small with like 50 bars, all within like walking distance. And there's golf courses that I guess that are, you know, basically a golf cart away. And people would go and hang for a while, and sometimes some would stay for 3-4 days, some wouldn't, and some would go around the rest of Ireland, some would just stay there and play golf, and he's had like a big open house for a month.
Wow.
I was on the guest list this year, but I guess I'm not going. Huh? It's a shame, but I would have made the time to at least go for a few days. I've never been there.
Everyone always wants to visit Dingle, Ireland.
Yeah. I mean, I have no idea what county that's in, or if that was his county or what. But
I'm looking at it on Wikipedia. It says a part of County Kerry.
Okay, it was County Kerry. We were County Clare, so I'm not I'm not sure what the whole difference is. But differences in area.
For
I don't
sure.
know if he was from there. It was one of those very dark, bright days. and you know, kind of a thing. So, but I really liked the fact that everybody there knew all the guests, and they liked everybody. And his nephew says to me, "A couple of those guys are kind of out there, but but you always kind of bring them back to the topic at hand as best you can." And I go, "Yeah, you're right, as best I can." Isn't that the truth? But I had never been in St. Cadge's. It's a small church, and you know, the priest did a really nice job. He must have really spent some time learning about Bill, and he did a whole Tom Wolfe analogy. You ever heard of Tom Wolfe?
No, I don't think so.
I think he wore, you know what, Google him. I think he wrote Look Home an Angel, and I think he wrote The Fire Next Time.
Oh, okay. Oh, he's looking for more familiar now. Yeah.
And
passed away a couple years back.
Did I get the books right or not? I know I read a couple of his.
Oh, he did the electric Kool-Aid test. I'm very familiar with that.
Okay, what are the books he wrote?
Let's see. The Candy Color Tangerine Flakes Streamline Baby from 1965.
Because he wrote some stuff like being in the Depression and stuff, but
the Bonfire Vanities. That's
right. That's right. The right stuff. But he was. You ever read? I'm talking about. I don't know who wrote. I forgot Luke Holman. Bonfire to Vanities was. Did you ever read that book?
No, I hear allegedly it was Donald Trump's favorite book. It was Donald Trump's favorite book. He had an interview like years back in the 80s, said that was his favorite book, Bonfire the Vanities.
I got about three quarters of the way through it, and my mother told me the ending, so I didn't finish it. I said, "Don't tell me the ending." So she told me the ending. You know, moms. but there's a page in there that virtually everybody should read.
Mm.
And it has to do with this guy who was making. And when was the book written? 1980 or something?
Yeah, 87 it was published.
87? You know, back in those days, like $1 million was like a real lot of dough. And the guy was a currency trader. So whenever anybody'd ask him, "What do you do for a living?" He goes, "I buy and sell money." And you know, on the show, I'm always talking about, you know, money is a good like everything else. And everybody closes their ears when I say that, right?
Mm.
Well, that's what currency traders do. They buy and sell money. Well, that was before there was the euro, so you had the mark, you had all those other, the French franc, and you had all those different currencies. And he was making $1 million a year in New York.
Hmm.
And he had the wife that didn't really like him, so he had the girlfriend. So the dude would be at home, and he'd be there, and the wife would be bitching at him. And he'd head over to the girlfriend's. And then she'd start bitching because she'd have a big enough apartment. But again, he basically doubled his misery. But he went through, and he's driving to work. And that page, everybody should read. Because he was talking about how the year before he made $1 million. Which back when $1 million was like, oh man, nobody did that, right? As opposed to, you know, Musk now has a trillion now.
Trillions, yeah.
Yeah. So he starts talking about how much he spent the year before. It turns out he spent like $1,050,000. The wife had to have a car, just had to have one. So he had a Mercedes in the garage, and it cost him in those days, like, you know, then unheard of, like $250-$300 a month to park the car. And they had put something like 80 miles on it or something. And they had there was a big reception down the block, and the wife would not even consider walking down the block. So they had a limousine pick him up, drive around the block, get dropped off. And the girlfriend, all she did was complain about she didn't have enough. Her apartment wasn't big enough. Mm-hmm. So between the two of them, yeah, I don't know what he got out of the deal, but between the two of them, he spent like all this dough. He spent his entire million plus. He was in the hole on the year.
Mm.
And it was just a page about how no matter how much money you make, you can piss it all away, basically, if you want to, right? I mean, and he did. And anyway, but the idea was that one of Tom Wolfe's big thing was you can never go home again. And the priest was talking about this is a neighborhood that Bill grew up with, and he said, you know, that's not true. If you're a really good guy, you come home again, the neighborhood welcomes you.
Mm.
And that's what we're doing. He was one of our guys that had to do some stuff in other places. He did some really good stuff for a lot of other people, and now he's home again. And
that's
it was pretty interesting. I mean, anyway, as everybody can tell, it was not just a big day for me, but it was a big day for Stocks and Jacks. And I think everybody on the show should feel good about it. You know, the fact that people you never even met. And then I see Audrey's, well, Audrey's friend, Nancy, who comes on one day. Do we have Jan yet, Mr. Flanagan?
He's just joining in a couple minutes.
Good, because he needs to hear this.
Oh, definitely.
So all of a sudden, I'm talking to Nancy and Jan, who, you know, I always give him grief even on the air that he never shows up for anything. So Nancy's, one of Nancy's best buddies is a person who was a major lady at Governor State, where Jan taught. She goes, we're looking for these faculty members, and we can't find this Flanagan guy. So Nancy goes, I mean, you can't find him. I'm on the show with him every other Monday. So they locate John. So it turns out this lady gets interested in the show, and all of a sudden a lot of people from John's old school listen every day. Because she said, oh, John's on this podcast. So it is. We have some very good people that listen to, I think, some people on the show who really try and do a good job. So, and it was a horrible thing going to this funeral, but it ended up, I met a lot of people I never would have met, and a lot of good things said about us, and even a few things said good about Flanagan. Can you imagine that?
Hard to imagine. But
John, are you with us?
Not yet. He's still going to join us.
He doesn't join us. Well, of course, now Friday, talk about business. Mm. The SpaceX came out. It's up $8.50 today. It came out $135. I think it traded as high as $190, maybe. Closed at $162. Maybe closed. Maybe it'll maybe trade at $185. And now it's $169. I mean, obviously we're giddy on the day with the, because we're up 99 in the S&Ps now, and we're 638 in the Nasdaq. And I guess I'll go into a little bit here, and then we'll have a break, and then hopefully John will be here. You know, there's more to this market than meets the eye. All you're going to hear all day long is that the market is cheering the fact that we have an oil settlement, or a settlement in Iran. And by the way, so am I. You know, I think everybody is. But the part that I keep talking about, and I really think that people, well, I don't know, it's hard to, this thing started in, I don't know the exact date, but it was February, right?
Yeah.
The 3-day war, or whatever it was supposed to be. The S&Ps were at 693. Now they're at 751. Okay, now I agree that we should be celebrating the fact that there might be a solution. I don't agree with the part that we're 10% better off than we were in February. Do you?
No. I don't think
so. And it's all because the people who are getting screwed are you and me and the listeners. Because it's all about pouring money into the system to save the system. And when we come back from break, I'm gonna, instead of talking about here, because people think I'm just beating up on our president, I'm going to talk about what's happening in Japan. Because we have talked many, many times about how the oil prices mess with them, and what they have to do, and how they've had to cash in some treasuries to buy the yen, because the yen's over 160. Let's see what the yen is today. FX. The yen is 160.15, so even though it's down a little bit, now again, it's 160 yen to the dollar. It's opposite the euro. When I say when the euro is worth 116, that means that to buy a euro, you need $1.16. Okay? The yen is the other way. When I say 160, it's 160 yen to the dollar. It's the exactly opposite flip of how you look at it. So the higher the yen gets, the worse it is for it, the higher the euro gets, the stronger the euro is versus the dollar. The higher the yen gets, it's weaker against the dollar. So it's a little bit different. S&P futures now up 100. Nasdaq futures up 649. We'll go to a quick break. Come back. We should have Mr. Flanagan. If not, Matt's our guest. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Sounds good.
This is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years, I've seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Big John. Big John.
Every morning at the mine, you could see him arrive. He stood 6 foot six.
And well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Matt Byrne on the board. Big John, Jimmy Dean, right?
That's right, yeah.
What a great song. It was really more like a ballad than a song, wouldn't you say?
Yeah,
you
really, like a folk legend or something.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't really break into song. Well, I guess he did a little bit, but more of a...
Paul Bunyan or something, yeah.
Yeah, it was almost like a rap of years ago.
Yeah.
Something along those lines. But anyway, S&P futures up 100, NASDAQ futures up 102, or I mean, I'm sorry, 652. Virtually every stock is up here. We have SpaceX up 739. Real quick, over in Europe, I mean, everybody's celebrating here. DAX up 312, up 1.3%. FTSE's only up 11. That's weird. 0.1%. CAC around up 97, 1.1%. Over in Asia, Nikkei's up 3,200. It's 5%. Hang Seng, and we're going to talk about the Nikkei. Hang Seng up 124.5%. Shanghai up 64. That's 1.6%. We've got bonds. Down a little bit, down 4 basis points, 4.45 in the 10-year. We've got oil, you might expect down a bunch, down 452, 80s, 36. We have gold to the moon, up 119, 43.58. That's almost 3%. That's good for good guys. A lot of my clients have gold and silver. Silver's up to 280, up 4%. So I think we're going to have a real nice day in there. We have a real nice day everywhere, pretty much. We don't really have short calls, only in a couple of spots, unfortunately, but... Fortunately, we only have a couple spots. Crypto, even Bitcoin's up $2,300, 66,151. We'll do traffic, weather, sports later. Although I did watch some soccer yesterday. We're going to have Mike Murphy's going to be on every week to talk about the World Cup. He's our expert, a resident expert on soccer because he was in Germany forever and loves the sport. And he also knows a lot about Army and stuff since he was in intelligence. So Mike is going to come out like he did last World Cup. So... We get to listen to him, Jen. What do you think?
Great, that's great.
So last night, I was forced to watch. I mean, Jimmy, of course, was giving me no one. Jim Lawler, who loves to engage. Right, there's four like billion people watching soccer. Blah blah blah. And how many people are watching it just because they think it's the thing to do now? Could care less about soccer. Half of them? I'm just asking. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to say. I mean, the thing is, it has an appeal, I guess, that, you know, it's pretty hard to compare it to other sports because it has, you know, the geopolitics feature to it.
Which, yeah.
You know, these are kind of like proxy, you know, conflicts that, you know, get people's nationalism worked up. And, you know, you don't really have that, you know, certainly in football or baseball. And it's a club sport, too. I mean, there's intercity rivalry. And so, I mean, it's got a lot of, I guess, a lot of fan connections that, you know, maybe it's replacing, you know, the connections that we're used to or that we thought were the ones that sports, you know, traditionally had, and it's put it into a bigger dimension now, really. So,
well, it's, you know, you get a lot of good time Charlies that have never seen a soccer game in their life, and all of a sudden they're into the World Cup like they actually think they are, you know, type of thing. And on one level, I absolutely love the sport because it reminds me of 16-inch softball. One bat and one ball and 20 people play. And in, you know, most areas of the world, you're not going to get everybody on a traveling hockey team where everybody spends $100,000 a year for their kid to play hockey. I mean, it's just not happening. So, but But soccer is easy to play. It's a great sport. That doesn't mean, you know. So, you know, people complain about it, and they go, all they do is fall like they're dead and complain to the referee. So I'm watching, what my brother's just saying, we're stuck watching Ecuador play somebody. A team in orange, and very, very orange, and I don't know who the other team was. Yeah, see if we can find out who the other team was. We had to feel like an idiot. Yeah. And sure enough, I'm watching, and every time the ref's back is turned, somebody in Ecuador tries to cheap shot some guy. And, of course, the guy goes down like he's dead. And then immediately everybody's barking at the referee. And then the guy gets up, and a minute later he's running like nothing happened to him. I'm going, this is exactly why.
Ivory Coast?
Yeah, it must have been Ivory Coast. Who ended up winning that game, Ecuador or Ivory Coast? I don't know. It was 0-0 the whole time I was watching.
It was Ivory Coast 1, Ecuador 0.
There you go. And Ecuador tried their best to knock all the guys out. But, you know, so, I mean, there's that. But by and large, I mean, it's a great sort of thing. I don't know you wouldn't get me paying $6,000 for a ticket like they're doing in New York. But anyway, John, just to kind of spin this yarn about, not so much a yarn about what's going on with this war, right, and this supposed settlement. Now, let's hope there's a settlement. I don't want anybody else getting shot. But you sit there and you say, here the market should be rallying, right? Okay, and it should. Except for one thing. Where should it be rallying from? Now, if I were to ask a younger or older John Flanning, I would say, okay, we got this war that's pretty unpopular. I'm not so sure it accomplished anything. A lot of people got killed. A lot of oil didn't hit the market. Prices are up everywhere. You would expect the day that it ends, the market to go up. But where would you expect the market to be?
Well, I think people are probably not, you know, they don't have their heads around maybe how much has really changed here. So it's hard to say what the market's going to be or where it should be. I think this kind of, for me anyway, I mean, what I've been following about it. I'm really glad it's over. Let me tell you.
Oh, me too.
If it is over. But I think it's a change that we're not, you know, used to even imagining in that part of the world. It could be. I mean, I'm thinking of the possibilities maybe more than the realities right now. But I think it changes the way I see the Middle East as a flashpoint for pretty much everything bad that can happen. And that's kind of the way it's been all my life, really.
I don't know that it's.
I'd like to see this as some, you know, new, you know, chapter that's opened up here. Maybe I'm putting too much stock into it, but I do think there's some energy here to, you know, get away from what we've been used to. And
how many times has that happened? I'm with you. I'm optimistic that it's over and some things are somehow better than when they got started. It'll be determined. But I'm trying to divorce that from, if you were, I'll say, of a traditional mentality, you would say when this thing starts to happen and bad stuff's happening to people's economies, your stock markets might show that. And then when it's over, you get some sort of a relief rally. Right, and that's what I think I would expect, which of course never happens now. But let's not worry about our stuff and when our ridiculous monetary policy and, you know, so many antics of the president pushing up so many stocks and SpaceX and the incredible amount of liquidity in the system, like Al talks about. Let's be neutral here and go over to Japan. Okay, now we're in a unique situation in that we the U.S. of A. pretty much produces as much oil as we need. Well, of course, we started selling it to other people, so our stuff went up. So our oil companies made money, and our consumers got screwed. Well, that's fine with just about every administration, including this one, right? It's not fine to you or me, but it's fine to them. And I guess it's, you know what? I got some clients that own some Chevron stock. It's fine for them. Okay, so there's winners and there are losers. But let's forget about us. Let's look at Japan. Like Japan today is at, and they're not exactly at an all-time record, but they're 69,317 on the Nikkei. Right now, this one, what date? It was somewhere in February it started, right? Somewhere, I'll pick the middle of February. The Nikkei was 57,000, so it's up a solid 16%. Now, if you look at Japan, they don't produce, do they have any oil wells? If they do, you know, I don't know. But so they're getting screwed because they're paying up on the oil. And oh, by the way, since you can only buy oil with dollars, currently anyway, and hopefully for a long time, they have to cash in yen to get the dollars to buy the oil. So John Lee was there a month ago or 6 weeks ago, so the inflation, people are bitching a blue streak. Because they haven't had really any inflation in years. Now, they have a stock market that's sort of unlike ours. A lot of it's owned by banks, and a lot of it's owned by the government. Now, here they claim they never buy S&P futures when the market's down. I don't know if I buy that, but let's say they don't. Over there, they do. They unabashedly do. So I looked at some stuff last night. Their market is 28% owned by banks and other large institutions, and it's like 9% owned by the government. Okay, so you would think that with all this bad stuff happening to Japan currency-wise as a country paying up for this stuff, and that their population is being gouged by inflation really for the first time in a while, that guess what? Their market would be down. Instead, it's up. Because in the words of your buddy Rahm Emanuel, never waste a good crisis. They've been pouring money into the system. For them, they didn't have any inflation forever, so they never really moved their money supply. Well, now they're up pushing 2%, 1.8 or so, since February. That's just the May numbers. We haven't figured out what the first part of June is. That's just March, April, May. Well, on a yearly basis, that's pushing 7.5, right? So that's where your inflation is coming from. And just like Hal talks about here, how much of that money actually went to a Japanese citizen paycheck? Zip, 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 if any, right? But now, everything that they own, everything that they have to buy, is going up in price. The stock market's up, and guess who owns all the stocks? Banks and the government. Well, not all, 36% of it. So, did they, like our knaves and thieves here, use this as an opportunity to just pump money to the people they want to pump money to? And how long can you do that, Jan, before you're I don't want to sound like Carl, but how long can you do that before your Japanese people go grab the big sword and go back to being whatever they were, ninja warriors? I mean, how long before people figure it out, for God's sake?
Well, you know, Japan has proven itself more tolerant than I ever expected, you know, an industrialized, advanced country to be, because they're, you know, stagnation, you know, over the last how many, what, 30
years?
Well,
now it's stagflation.
Yeah, but it's, you know, they have, I never thought they would be this complacent about it, and maybe the inflation will change all this and, you know, rile some feathers. I don't know. I mean, the Japanese were kind of an interesting test case because they tend to be not very emotional or, you know, demonstrative about what's going on. They're hard to read. They're inscrutable. They kind of pride themselves on the way they hide their emotions. So I don't know if it's going to be an outburst of any kind. I suspect not. Plus, if oil prices come down, as I imagine they will right away, this might be something that they could chalk up to experience and just add it to their, you know, list of woes that they, you know, muddled through in the past.
But some people made out like a bandit.
Oh yeah, and that's always happening here too. You know, it isn't like, you know, people here don't seem to be in any mood to rise.
But what's the call to action? And that's why Milton Friedman would always say, inflation is the cruelest tax of all. Because the governments make out like a bandit on it, some people make out like a man, and the rest of the people lose. But when you talk about what would it take, I think if John some crap here, he deserves it. I'm not talking about what it take to get you out to dinner. What would it take? I mean, where would the price of, if you know, if you're going to put a roof on your place, you and the lady that own the building, what if it's $500,000? You're still not going to go get your sandwich sign and get a gun behind the sandwich sign and go out and revolt. I mean, it's something, what can you do about it? I mean, it is probably, it's one thing if you run somebody for office that you don't like, you might actually, you know, at least write stuff and do things for people that, you know, you might write on X or something, you show your outrage someplace. But what exactly can anybody do about inflation? What kind of call to action is that other than you're pissed off? You're quietly pissed off. What else can you do?
Well, I remember Gerald Ford said we should wear buttons to say, whip inflation now, win.
Yeah, well, that was long before Jimmy Carter. Everybody blames it all on Jimmy Carter,
yeah,
right?
I don't think that did anything for anybody.
Well, and
it didn't make them feel any better about inflation. You
know? No, but I mean, what I'm saying, it is, when I first learned about this, and I was, you know, very young, and I said, man, you know, these guys at the Fed, they just didn't get it, you know, kind of thing. And Milton Friedman was walking around saying, you know, guys, you're the one that are you're creating it. Well, now here it is 3, 4, 5 times later. I refuse to believe these people are just that dumb and this is just accidental. Clearly, the people in Japan, you know how to read a monetary theory book. They know just what they did. They refloated the banks, and the government is now way up on the money that they... and they own 7% of the market, 9% of the market, John. For God's sake. And you know, that's... What's the total value of the Japanese stock market? And the government owns 9% of it. And they just made 20% on a crisis. I mean, how do people like us, how do people at the funeral Saturday sitting in St. Kitts, how do we have any idea of the amount of money this is and who's stealing it all? Because it's not even really stealing. It's like government policy. Oh man, you got to pour money in the system. You know, blah blah blah. You know, you don't want to go into a we can't even figure out whether if the economy's moving forward or back. You hear people on CNBC, oh man, the economy's great, everybody's buying. Of course they're buying, the prices are all up. I mean, you're using every penny you have because that's what you need to do to live on. How is that good for you?
Well, one of the things that's I think become pretty clear to me in this, you know, say in the last 10 years or so, I don't know where I draw the beginning line, but you know, we have seen not only just pushing people's buttons about, you know, inflation and making things unaffordable, but it's now, you know, it's happening in the UK and throughout Europe too. They've tested people's patience in really every way possible by opening borders, you know, flooding the country with new people, which is inflationary.
How's that inflationary?
Yeah. Well, you all of a sudden you bring in a bunch of people and you start throwing money at them in order to keep them afloat because they don't come with incomes,
but
they don't come with jobs.
Don't take this wrong, but inflation is every time a monetary phenomenon. In whatever side of the aisle you're on, you make up...
What it did to city budgets, what it did to state budgets, and the way it rejiggered everything and, you know, threw money away
in order to keep
a whole new population of people
afloat.
I'm
thinking one side told people that, and they foolishly believed it, and the other side told people other stuff that made no sense and foolishly believed it. I mean... You look at the Chicago, the amount of people that came up on the buses. By the way, you know they're suing the bus companies now? Think they're getting any money out of that? They're suing the companies.
What it did to rents, Tom?
No, it didn't. John, they brought up 50,000 people. Or was it 35 or 40? There's 7 million people live in the metropolitan area. That's not as many people that come to a Sox game, for God's sake. The idea that it totally blew the...
But it's all on the public gold, Tom.
It's okay. It's nowhere near as much as the guys who got overpaid for doing the Ryan. The money is...
Well,
it's not like it's nothing.
Scandal, Tom. But this is on that scale, too.
But
it blew money nobody had, and it drove up rents for people at the lowest end of the housing market.
I'm not saying that it was a good thing, John. I'm saying.
But this is, and look, now you add all that to what's happened in the UK, because they've had it in spades, and they got outrageous fuel costs, and they can't heat their homes in the winter. Those people are rising up. And if that happened here, we would be rising up.
Okay, but I mean, it's all about who you put the blame on. All right. And why don't, well, all I'm saying is on a monetary level, the blame belongs right in Washington and the people who are on the end. Elon Musk has made more money this week than every migrant coming here in the last 5 years cost us. We're not even on the same planet. Is everybody going to be able to borrow $1 zillion and buy this SpaceX thing? I mean, we're not even close. I mean, do I want 50,000 people dumped off on buses here in Chicago? You know I don't. But I try and keep track of. It's not. I don't need people on one side telling me they cost more money than anyone. I see what's going on in the city. That's a pimple on the ass of an elephant. It really is. I mean, it shouldn't have happened. I get that part. But I mean, let's not. I'm trying to chase the big money here. I mean, is what I'm trying to do. And you think that the rents are up in Japan because they let a few people in the country? The rents are up in Japan because all of a sudden they poured his money in, and the guys who own the place are charging more. Because it ends up helping people with fixed. They have a mortgage and have an asset.
Japan's not much for letting people in.
Well, okay. But I mean, what, if they did, they'd be blaming it on him, right? It's all the dollars don't lie. The money is going to the rents are not. It's not a demand. It's not like we all of a sudden when you talk about rents going up here. If rent, God, I wish it did happen, Jen. If all of a sudden you and I decided, wow, this is my favorite topic, railroad cars. If all of a sudden somebody gave us enough money to we put a plant here where we're going to refurbish CTA cars and build some new ones, and we're going to build the new Amtrak cars, and all of a sudden in 2 years you and I are hiring 3,000 people or whatever it would take to do that, probably not less than that, say 1,800, and all of a sudden you need bars and restaurants and things around it, and by the way, these 1,800 people got to live somewhere, and all of a sudden before you can build enough places, the rents are going to go up in the meantime, but the idea is now that the rents are higher, somebody's going to say, hey, you see that block over there that's been knocked down for 20 years? These rents are high. Let's go build some places. We can charge a little less and still make money. That's the American dream, Jen. There's nothing wrong with that. But the idea that you just pump money into the system and some people all of a sudden their house is worth $200,000 more than the year before and they think they're a genius, that's not our way, although it seems to be, doesn't it? It has been our way since 68 anyway. I'm just saying. I mean, all it does is the people who owe money to other people make out like a bandit. And I just, it's not, I mean, I'm not even talking about our politics. I'm looking at Japan. How the hell is the market up 20% from where this whole thing started when all it did was hurt everybody over there? Because they use it as an opportunity to put money in the system and pump up the stock market. They've got inflation, which they never had. 90% of the people are hurting and 10% of the people are clucking. I mean, do you disagree with that or not?
No, well, I mean, to me, the reason the stock market has become this, you know, engine, and I don't think it drives very much other than the stock market itself, it becomes an easy distraction. You know, it enables people to think or to lie to themselves that this equals prosperity, that people are really getting the benefit of all
well,
this.
Well, it does, but you... How does it sure. not?
Well, but the thing is, it doesn't. You know?
Well, but I mean, and Jen, it's been like this for 25 years. I mean, try and tell somebody, I manage money for people. We have people, not so much my guy, well, some of my guys too, but, you know, my brother will say, Joe Smith just took out a margin loan for 70 grand and put in a new bathroom in his house. You think Joe isn't happy that his stock's up 400% in the last 10 years? He didn't make that money. Well, he invested it, which you're supposed to do, and we helped, and I'm proud of that, and he's happy with us, and all those things are positive. But the idea is Joe made way more on his wealth than he ever did. It wasn't like he made 100 grand a year, lived on 40, and put 60 in the bank. like when you and I were young. You know, the wealth bubble is just that. But it's been a bubble for so long, nobody thinks it is a bubble. And maybe it isn't, right? If we just keep pouring money in the system, guess what? It probably won't go down unless the interest rate gets to the point where it snags the whole system. But we're nowhere near there, are we?
Well, I don't know. I mean, what I've been reading lately, and you know, I'd like to talk to Nancy and Audrey about this too. The foreclosure rates are, you know, I wouldn't say galloping yet, but they're going up. You know, year over year, anyway. Not necessarily month over month. Not that big a change, but I think that's a big bellwether of, you know, what people are finding is unaffordable now, and it includes their house, any kind of house. And I think that this is, you know, maybe it's an extension of the you know, the business belly ups that, you know, galloped during COVID, where all these restaurants got put out of business and small businesses couldn't have employees come in and they had to shut down. But I think it's become now something on the domestic front where people's homes are, you know, the biggest bargaining chip they have, and they can't get one, you know, because it's so expensive, and apparently they can't hold on to it either if they do have it.
Well,
I just think that this is something that's, you know, I don't want to project where this could go, because this is what was happening, you know, pre-1929 too, when the real estate market got so overheated.
When I'm challenging you here, please understand, nobody agrees with you more than I do. but for good podcast and for a challenge, I'm gonna challenge you. Okay, NVIDIA is up 350. How many billion shares they got outstanding? 25. So we're pushing $90 billion in market cap this morning of wealth. Micron, it's up $80. Okay? They got $1.1 billion outstanding. There's another $90 billion. Oracle's up 5. I don't know how many. They got several billion shares outstanding. We got Microsoft's up 6. Now, Microsoft's been down, but still, they've got like 3 or 4 billion shares outstanding. Do you think the people that are up $100 billion in NVIDIA give a rat's ass about foreclosures of houses that we people care about being up 0.2%?
No, of course not. No.
I mean, how? Question is, how bad does that have to get for 1929 to happen? And you know, I'm just as worried about that as you are, and I'm just as concerned about the foreclosures as you are. I'm just saying, what's it going to cause somebody other than you and me to focus on it?
Well, take 2008, 2009 as the most recent example of this, where, you know, foreclosures were very fashionable then, I guess is one way of putting it.
Well, if you don't have the dough, you foreclose. What else are you going to do, right?
Well, you know, the lingering effect of that, and it was different in different parts of the country, definitely. I mean, Chicago, in some ways, has never come back fully, because it never went quite so high for that as other places did.
It didn't have the huge. It wasn't California. It went to the moon and came down.
No, but it's been a grinding return. I remember, you know, hearing the projections in, you know, 2007, 2008, when the bottom was falling out. Everything. It's like the prices, you know, for houses were not going to return to those levels again till 2015. I thought, 2015, my God, that's 7 years from now. Well, here is, you know, we're in 2026.
Yeah, we're way above those prices.
Well, not everywhere. I mean, certainly not in commercial real estate. You know,
I won't say a big thing, but I wrote a thing back in, and not only, I wrote a missive because somebody wrote a real paper on it. I'm going to say 2007, the median home price was $235. I have this written someplace, somewhere I'll never find it. And if somebody gave you the $45,000 down for 20%, which of course nobody puts down anymore again, I won't say nobody, but not very many, you're talking about a loan of $185,000. And, you know, I don't know who's on today, Audrey or Nancy, one of the two, but we're talking about a loan of 185, and you needed, you know, assuming you didn't, well, you have two incomes, and well, two incomes, no kids, a lot different than two incomes, four kids, because then you got to pay for whatever. So, but only 15% of the population made the $85,000 that you needed to carry that home insurance taxes. You need 85 grand a year, and only 15% of the people made more than 85 grand a year. This is 2000 and late 7 to early 2008, somewhere in there. So I read this thing and I go, we got some trouble, just like you're talking about now. But then we had so much money on top of money, because people were borrowing in Japan at 1.5% and been piling into mortgage here at 6.5%. So the leverage, it was $35 of leverage on every mortgage loan. We don't have that today, John, I don't think, that kind of crazy leverage, because I don't think the money can get out of Japan that quickly. Plus, their interest rates are up, because now the rates over there are 2.5, which probably means you have to pay 4 or 5, so there's no... even you and I aren't going to pay 5 to make 6, right? I mean, it's not the same game. So, but now, pricing house prices is what, 406.
Well, that's, again, the median price, Tom, which I think it doesn't tell half of the
story. No, I'm not talking about average. I'm talking about the median.
That's what I mean. I just think that's you know, that market, that number is really, that doesn't reflect any kind of a profile of the typical house that people can go out and buy.
Well, I'll tell you
it's
what.
Because the market's so slanted in favor of the people that Audrey talks about that have money in their pocket, and they can go out and pay cash and bypass an appraisal and everything else.
I'll bet the four, well, it's now up to what, like 420 or something? I'll bet 420 is close to the median price in Tinley and Orland. Maybe a little.
Yes, in those places, Tom.
Well, but where are you talking? I mean, it's probably high for Indiana, or it's way high for Mississippi. I mean, it's just a number. All I'm saying is, in terms of that number,
it's way high for Chicago. If you think about who those people are who can afford that house, and how many houses don't figure in that number at all, because they can't be purchased. They can't be bought by people. If they were half that price, they'd still be unaffordable to a lot of prospective buyers.
Look, before we beat up on the numbers, let's just follow it through from 2008. So if you needed 85 grand at 235, what do you need at 410? You need, what, 150? How, what percentage of the population makes 150? I'll bet it's less than 15%. Not to mention, as Nancy talked about last week, the taxes and the insurance are way more than they were in 2007. So, by the way, I'm trying my best here to agree with you. We're actually way worse than we were in 2008, if you look at those numbers.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
What did Audrey say a few weeks ago, that the if you want a starter home, and we're not, you know, Tinley and Orland are not, we're not talking about Kenilworth. I mean, Orland's got some real nice areas, and they get, you know, some gated stuff and everything, but Tinley has a lot of just regular, so does Orland, West Orland. I'm going to say that whichever one comes on today, I'm going to say a starter home there now is about 340.
And that to me is not a starter home, then.
Well, but I mean, it's, you know, a couple of, two, three, it's three bedrooms, you know, half and a half.
Right. I mean,
you know,
on paper, yes. But as a starter home that people can actually, you know, put money aside for a year and have a down payment and qualify for a loan,
well,
no.
It's not our house on 50th and Morgan. I mean, the 500 square foot little bungalow. I mean, it's not that. You're right. In terms of a starter home, it's a hell of a lot nicer, but it's still
nice.
Yeah, it's considered a starter home today.
It's too nice for the average person.
But what do you,
what's that song?
What do you think of
too good for the average man?
What do you think of very basic frame or small bungalows in Mount Greenwood? It's got to be three and a quarter. I mean, that's, we should be waiting for the girls to ask that question, but
you might find them
recording stopped.
Is there an AI in here?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think we might have some AI in here. I think Matt is not defending us from AI.
Yeah, I'll keep my defenses up longer, I guess.
Well, yeah, we had a God, John, what happened last week? Was Jimmy doing it? Something came out. It was something about AI. It blurts into the show.
When I logged out, I mean, I did it on a different computer today, but
well, it does say.
It said reporting, in progress or something. Like, oh.
In our meeting, It says John added Reed AI, but that could be many Johns.
You know what? Whenever John Lee comes in, it says AI. He must be here.
Might be John Lee. He's our AI guy.
I said to Jimmy last week, who the hell is this AI guy piling into our Zoom? Is Trump piling in here? And he goes, no, it's John Lee. God.
Well, Tom, just hold that number about the median homes, whatever, and put it to the side. And look at the commercial end of it, for which, yeah. I don't know where you find a counterpart to what this is looking like now. But, Ken Griffin's Citadel headquarters downtown, 131 South Dearborn, he got out, and then the building was on the market. And it just sold, and it's the record price in the last 5 years for a commercial sale in the Loop. I think it was $137 million, which is, but that's 76% below what it sold for in 2006.
Yeah.
So here you got, houses that the average person just coming out of, school or getting married or whatever, never going to have enough money to afford a decent house in a decent school district without, falling into some kind of family wealth that's unimaginable for them. And then you got, commercial buildings that you can't give away.
In some areas. You've got everybody working from home, although that's turned around some. But it's weird, Jan. I wish someday, if you and I had time, actually, Jan and I could actually stop arguing and we actually can do stuff together. it sounds like we're arguing, but we're really not. We're just trying to, I'm trying to get the most knowledge out of them. There's a social change with the downtown area here. And it has, I don't know if Otto Kerner was still alive and wrote something. It has to do with, I don't know what it has to do with it. Where in some ways our incredible transportation system is now becoming a negative, sort of like it did in New York in the past and maybe is again. You don't want certain people to be able to get certain places. My brother has dinner every Sunday, and one of the guys who comes over is kind of his odd guy. Not an odd guy, he's a good guy, but he thinks a little different than most people. He's an iron worker. And he's telling me they're building a new office building at 5 Van Buren, 600 West Van Buren. I'm like, why? How many office buildings do we have downtown? What do we need a new one for? I mean, like John just saying, the ones down here are going for dirt. Now, nobody wants anybody to be able to get from these neighborhoods. I mean, in the city is making an extension of the Red Line to Elk Gardens, which is, I don't even want to describe it, Jen, but the people who shot up, I'm not making a shot at everybody who lives in Elk Gardens, but the people who, remember the big shooting when they assassinated the guy in Oak Street in broad daylight years ago?
Yeah.
Those cars came out of Elk Gardens. This guy, this rapper, was on Oak Street shopping for his girlfriend or something. All of a sudden, they see they had the cars piling out of Elk. I mean, I'm not so sure the average person downtown is dying to have. Now, the story ought to be is people from Elk Gardens now have cheap, reliable transportation to downtown, so they all of a sudden can be, if downtown was a bustling live place, they can come down here and get jobs like everybody else, cheap and easy, and not have to drive and pay $30 to park and all the other crap you have to do. That's the theory. But is anybody taking it like that? The last thing I want is the Elk Gardens population being able to hop on a train and get out the subway stop in front of my office building. I mean, am I right or wrong, Jen?
Well, and no, I'm with you on the time. And but the economics of this didn't make any sense from the get-go. It isn't just so much the quality of the people. It's just that's not. People who live in Elk Gardens and lots of other places do not have jobs downtown.
Well, my point is we have a vibrant essentially downtown light in the West Loop. Why did we need another downtown? Because of the transportation system, which was supposed to be a massive advantage and has been for 150 years, now all of a sudden it's considered a disadvantage, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you got to be truthful about this stuff. Unless you tell somebody they got a broken leg, how are you going to fix the broken leg, right? I mean, somehow or another. Go ahead.
Well, I was looking at the proposed route of this Red Line extension to Oakdale Gardens, and how many billions of dollars it will cost before we're through with it. But
with four stations.
When I looked at the way it overlaid the existing transportation system to downtown Chicago, a couple of the stations, just south of 95th Street, completely overlap with the Metro Electric line to Blue Island, where there's a stop at like 121st and Stewart.
There's only four stops, right?
Yeah.
103rd, 111th, 123rd, and the last one.
Right. And that's, but the usage, you would think if there were people in those neighborhoods that needed access to loop, bound transportation, there might be a reason to add the CTA, because Metra, even though the Southside Metra fares are subsidized, they're still higher than the CTA. But there's like 50 people a day that get on the Metro Electric at some of those Blue Island stops. So here we are building a duplicative Red Line extension that's going to cross very close to those stations, and they'll have stations there that have to have maintenance and people operating them, and surveillance and everything else. And are there going to be 50 people a day getting on or off there? I don't know. It's not like any more people are going to be using those stations than they already have access to on the Metro line.
Well, Jen, when
so
you look at these...
who does this really serve? It's just a way of juicing, the contracts and the influence and the pork and everything else. And what we'll be left with is this, it's a system we can't even police now.
Well,
and,
I mean,
and
you
then
should...
You add how many miles to it and expect people to feel comfortable, safe.
Well, When I was young, I was 12 years old, 13 years old. I had no problem going down the Western bus to 63rd and getting on the Green Line, and being, if I was with a buddy, we'd be the only two white people in the car. I never once felt afraid, never once, and nothing ever happened. It's not like, all of a sudden if you were in a neighborhood that was of a different color, you had a problem. I went to every school I was in was in black neighborhoods. I never had a problem with anybody. I mean, everybody was nicer and all get out. And all of a sudden, this sort of changed. And I don't know what happened, John. I mean, the family's going downhill, whatever it was. It's not a racial thing. It's some kind of an economic. That's what Otto Kerner talked about. How many years ago, right? But I mean, if you look at the city of Chicago, in some way we're as anal as New York in terms of our transportation system. When I was at Jessica, went out to New York and she stayed. Well, you guys had the same problem, Matt. If you stayed in Brooklyn and you wanted to go to the Bronx, you got to come to Manhattan and go back out.
Mm, definitely.
I mean, but you could take a map of Chicago, plunk it down, and by the way, John, I'd love to do this. I mean, I don't want to stop being a money manager, but someplace you put the map of the city of Chicago down, and what do we need? Okay, you can see all the current CTA lines. And you look at the city, and there's places that are totally unserved, correct?
Yeah.
Totally unserved. I mean, the L, the green line that ends at 63rd and Ashland should probably go to 79th and Cicero, right? Or somewhere along those lines, 87th, right? There needs to be one. There's a whole chunk of the north side that's not used. And actually, there's old railroad places that are abandoned, railroad tracks. And instead of putting another subway there or rapid transit, they're putting bike train. Why can't you put both? I mean, and what we really need, we need a loop that goes, if you're from the south side, you shouldn't have to go downtown to get to Cicero. Yet you do. And I don't know how much we're off topic here, whatever the topic is, market pump to the moon, we were celebrating that. Jan, when you come, you look at the Dan Ryan and you look at the Kennedy, they're mobbed all the time on weekends. When they're packed. Well, why are they packed? All right, go back to the 50s. when they built the Ryan. Now, what did people expect to have happen? Well, it was a through system because of Chicago's geography, but basically it's a local expressway, half-local expressway. You expected when people left downtown, instead of taking Halsted or Western or something, or State Street, they were going to take the Ryan down to 43rd and get off, or at 51st, and go over a mile down the road and go to our house at 51st and Morgan. But now, there's none of that. Well, not none, but very little of that. It's the people from Oak Lawn wanting to go to Cicero that have to come through the loop, have to go back out again on the expressways. I mean, I just drove it last night. You drive the Ryan down from the south side. There's nobody getting off it at 55th, 51st, 47th. I don't even know if there's an exit at 51st. There's nobody getting off it. It was designed where people actually were supposed to live there, right? Nobody lives there. I mean, nobody. Very few people live there. And if they do, they're not using the expressway. It's all about people like me going from the north side to the south side, or if you watch, everybody's going out on the Eisenhower. The ramp to the Eisenhower is packed. So people from the south suburbs or from Indiana or someplace, to get to Cicero, you got to use the expressway. It's not at all what it was designed to be, is it?
No. No, and you look at other cities and their transportation systems, maybe this is the kind of the curse of Chicago being a recent phenomenon as a city, you know, compared to Paris or London or, you know, lots of other big cities. But, you know, it's all spokes and no, you know, circumference for the transportation routes. And, you know, if you, in Paris, if you want to, you know, you don't have to go to, you know, the Ile de la Cité to get a route out to go straight west. You can go, and you can circumvent it in the, you know, all number of ways where you can connect two points with the shortest possible distance. And there's a metro route to do it.
Yeah, but Paris doesn't have a massive lake on one side. That's the problem.
Right. And that's another, you know, disadvantage. But, you know, part of the problem too was the loop became so successful as a retail and, you know, commercial center, and the stock yards too. You know, Stockyards had its own L system.
Every single lines. Railroad in the city had an access to the stockyards.
Yeah.
I mean, all of that. You see those big bridges over the Ryan from like the IC and the trains over there. It was also, they could all get to the stockyards, all like 41st Street there.
And the issues too were, if you, you know, like where Western Electric was, you know, at its Hawthorne plant out on the west side, you could fill your entire payroll with people from, you know, walking distance or easy commuting distance by the west side, you know, L lines. And, you know, but you didn't have to, and nobody would have considered traveling, say, from Altgeld Gardens to work at the Hawthorne plant.
No, that's true. My uncle worked there for years. He lived at like 63rd and Costner or something. You know, near Southwest Side.
And you'd take the streetcar, and you know, it took an hour maybe to get there.
He drove an old red Buick. God.
I just think, you know, Chicago became, you know, prisoner of a system that at one time was pretty good, but it always envisioned that the loop would be where everybody wanted to go and everybody had to go, you know, for a lot of jobs, and you didn't need to go from, you know, Palos Heights to Chicago Heights or to Dyer, Indiana, or any number of other places where there are jobs, and it isn't all about downtown anymore, and public transportation has long since, you know, given up on serving those kind of routes.
Well, Jan, we had some mayors that, mayors in, let's say, their significant others, they had a much different view of the city than what the city is. I mean, I won't go into names, but Chicago was spectacular in terms of its rail. I mean, if you had rail, you had to go through Chicago. Every trucking, every rail, the stuff was here. And all of a sudden, people didn't like that. They made it very difficult to have rail come through here. Even the unit trains wanted to bypass Chicago. It took them, you know, a day to get from North Dakota to here, a day to get from here to wherever they were going on the East Coast. And, oh, by the way, it took them 3 days to get through Chicago, which is insane. So people decided, okay, we're going to de-emphasize the rail. We're going to make it real hard for these people. Instead of saying, oh, by the way, we have these rail right-of-ways, let's turn a couple of them into trucking right-of-ways on top of it for container movement. No imagination like that. We don't care about the rail. Screw the rail. Now, all of a sudden, a lot of your rail hub is in Joliet. It's all south of the city. Now, what did that do for Chicago? Nothing. And then we had people that didn't want any stinking factories here, right? Okay, now you can get away with that. I don't know how many people have ever been to San Francisco or how many people have been to Boston. You can get away with that if you're San Francisco because you got Oakland across the street where you can kick all your blue-collar people. And by the way, San Francisco, you can walk from one end to the other. When we were younger, we could anyway, John, even with the hills. Well, Chicago's 10 times bigger than that. You can't get rid of all your blue-collar jobs here and still have neighborhoods. And what are you doing? I mean, granted, you want to cut down on the pollution or something. You can't have 6 million people working downtown. Not that there aren't other businesses, but all of a sudden, we don't want any stinking factories. Screw them. Get them out of here. We're all going to make housing. Well, for every person who needs to live here, you need a job, right?
Yep.
Somehow or another, we really lost our way. The education system was allowed to sink. We don't do blue collar stuff anymore. Even now, we're not. Why these schools aren't open at night, teaching adults what the new job is coming in here? How do we even approach a place who's going to build railroad cars if we don't say, God, we got these five or six schools that got great welding programs, great electrician programs, whatever. We'll feed people right into your place. How do you even have that conversation when you don't have any human capital or little human capital? I mean, why did we have a succession of, well, mayors, governors, presidents with virtually no vision? Is it just the money? Is it just get the guys around me money and that's all they do all day or what? And where's the vision with anybody?
The vision got turned into, we don't want a small manufacturing plant in a Chicago neighborhood. It just doesn't make sense to try to get stuff in and out of there. Let's move it overseas. Let's abandon the people who had two or three generations of their family working at this place. Chicago was just full of places like this, Tom, where you can see it, remnants of it if you drive around. But every neighborhood had some kind of commercial whatever. Maybe it was a dairy, or it was a printer, or car repair. It had some kind of anchor, and it wasn't always just blue collar. I mean, the neighborhood where I live now, Banker's Life had like a whole complex at the corner of Lawrence and Elston. Their insurance industry was in this neighborhood. Boom. It's all reconfigured now as senior citizen housing, and has nothing to do with jobs. It's all, this is to make more houses for people. Yeah, but how does people pay for these houses? It's kind of like what the mayor we have now too. If you view the city that you're supposed to manage and plan for as a science project, rather than a real place that's got real people in it, and not everybody's going to see it the way you do, you're going to get some disastrous planning or no planning. And it's kind of, we've had a lot of people like that who were ideologically driven, who thought they knew best what Chicago should always have been.
Did they even, too late now
to make it what it should have been 150 years ago. Trying to figure out what it should be.
Did they even think past their own whatever? If somebody, what would you do? Well, what I would do. If somebody came to Chicago and wanted to see both the potential and the disgustingness here, I would do two things. First thing I'd do is I'd hop the Orange Line to Midway. And for what I'm talking about here, it's built on old railroad rights, right? And so it's kind of an odd, but it gets you to Midway pretty damn fast. And you go through these areas that are essentially old railroad right-of-ways. And in there, you'll see, I'm going to say in Southwestern, you probably pass 15 to 20 essentially manufacturing sites with nothing but rail right behind them, which is what...
Right, square tracks coming off.
Yeah, the whole bit.
Loading docks.
I'm going to say three or four of them are still operating. There's a couple of places that do piping and those kinds of things. And also, there's plenty of room. The railroad right-of-way is so big. You could have put a one- or two-lane roadway back there, special access, to get your semis from place to place to be able to pull the container stuff to the railroad yard. You could have, with any kind of imagination, they managed to have, by the way, a private road that goes from the hotel's end by Wacker Drive there to Soldier Field just for those guys. Okay, yeah. So they managed to put a private road there on what an old railroad right away, but there's no way they're doing that where all these factories are. So maybe 2 of 20 are open. Okay, and then I'd plop your ass on the Rock Island. And going south, you want to be in the left-hand window. And you'll see where the Robert Taylor homes used to be. And I'm going to say, John, 60, 70,000 people live in the Robert Taylor homes. If you ever want to see what they're about, what was the TV show Good Times?
That's Cabrini Green, right?
No, it was the Taylor homes, I thought. Anyway, it was one of they're both the same, pretty much.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
This is a string of all these, you know, high-rise, essentially tenements, for lack of a better term, all along the Rhine. Well, they're all gone. But now you look where they were. There were 60,000 people there. There's nobody between the train tracks and State Street, which has to be, what is it, three blocks, and it's just grass. There's nobody even there. So it's not like there's no room here. When somebody says, sorry, John, if somebody says, gee, we can't take 25,000 immigrants, what are you talking about? Here's four blocks. There used to be 60,000 people. It's empty. It's not like Chicago can't get some more people here. I'm not saying open the border and those kinds of things, but if we need those factories open and we need people living there, in my mind, or where am I wrong?
Right, well, David Roeder, who used to write for the Sun-Times and cover real estate, his comment has always stuck with me. He says Chicago does not have a shortage of affordable housing. Chicago has a shortage of safe neighborhoods. And I don't think anybody at the Sun-Times really wanted him to say that, and he didn't stick around as a steady feature for Sun-Times after he wrote that column. But I think he was absolutely right. And you could live at 51st and Federal if it were a safe neighborhood, but the people who lived at 51st and Federal in Taylor Homes didn't want to live there because it wasn't safe.
Well, Jen, I also think, though, where I live now, I remember when it wasn't safe. If you have enough people that have good jobs, they crowd the losers out and make it safe. I mean, downtown, when I first came down here in 19, God bless, I was working for Pullman. You didn't stay downtown at nightfall. There was nobody on the street. All of a sudden, it became very vibrant. The exchanges grew and grew and grew. If there's people all around the place, in general, it's safe, right? Because they wouldn't be there if it wasn't safe. You know, good people crowd out the other people, don't they? In some ways.
When the buildings in the South Loop started to become old and tired and businesses didn't want to, locate there, they converted them to apartments, and condos, and all of a sudden, people walk in their nice, French poodles at 10 o'clock at night down State Street.
Hey, what do you got against French poodles? Audrey's got one.
Nothing at all. But now it's the ruffians are crowding out the nice people. Nobody wants to walk around.
Well, that's right. That's right. But I mean, if all of a sudden those factories were alive and everybody, every one of them had 400 people in each one of them, and they all had a house. You'd be surprised how quick those people crowd the other people out of Englewood. Not in a racial or in a racial way. I'm saying, this house is worth here. Get out of here if you can't afford it. Type of thing. I mean, it happens. It happened on the whole north side, right?
Yep.
So let me get this straight. If you ever made it out to Odds, would I have to have a conversation with a poodle that you don't like poodles?
Oh, God, no. Some of my best friends are poodles.
You could be the first person to have you ever
some
bit.
Of the only people who speak to me anymore are poodles.
I tell you what, that crazy dog yesterday wasn't supposed to rain right that much. It rains all morning, and now I'm the walker guy, right? She was pestering me all morning to go for a walk, and every time I'd open the door, and it's raining, and she'd look outside and she'd go nah, but then she'd pester me again. My dog Scruff, he was such a goofball. I had him for a few years, and I got him when he was old. He'd want to go outside. And open up the door, and there's a driving rainstorm. He put his head back. I was, I'm not going out in that. 5 minutes later, he's bugging me again. Open the door again. Hey, I'm not going. he kept thinking I was going to change the weather or something. I don't know, but I didn't have the power. God. Anyway, we should have one of the ladies soon. SP Futures up 90. NASDAQ Futures up 608. We're going to go through the whole list here with some sports. Be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
All right, brain. You don't like me and I don't like you. But let's just do this and I can get back to killing you with beer.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. Matt Byrne on the board. SP Futures up 92. We were up 100, but still, 92 is a lot. NASDAQ Futures up 613. That's a lot. That's 2%. We're celebrating big time what we think is we hope is an end of the hostilities over in Iran. And then you got J.D. Vance saying stupid stuff like million details or a lot of details left to be filmed, but we have all the cards. Just get the deal done. Just get the deal done. We don't need all this stuff. We forgot. I'm not so sure we have all the cards at all, but let's...
I don't think it's a poker game.
Yeah, plus I don't think it's a poker game.
Yeah.
Well, it's been that way since Trump told Zelensky we got all the cards, right? Yeah. How's any of this stuff going? If this was a poker game, I don't know if we'd be winning. Let's just get it over with. Nobody else getting killed. Let's just do it. I mean, I'm so happy that it's going to end. Let's not screw it up with our talk here, for God's sake.
Definitely.
Over in Europe, DAX up 341, 1.4%. FTSE only up 5%. I'm real curious as to why that is, but because the CAC round's up 104, 1.2%. FTSE's been kind of an outlier. They're up when the other guys are down lately. We'll have to get somebody on who knows more about that than moi. We're in Asia, big moves here. Nikkei up 3,200, that's 5%. Hang Seng up 124, not as much there, 0.5%. They were up more, I'm going to say, I'm surprised it's not as much. Shanghai up 64, 1.6%. So, again, the Hang Seng is the laggard there somewhat, not sure why. Bonds down 3 basis points, 4.45 on the 10-year. Still really high, but below the 4.5 number we kind of look at. This is the way Friday we were up, too. Friday we were up 350 on the Dow, 37 on the S&P, 79 on NASDAQ. So it's been a really good few days. Oil, as you might expect, down 462, 80.26. Brent down 483.08. RBOB, which is the number we look at, it's down 9 cents today, 295. So I'm going to say average prices should be under $4 just about everywhere, depending on your taxes and so forth, which I paid $3.83 on Sunday, which is a long way down from the $4.99 a few weeks ago. Gold up 115, that's a big move, almost 3%. $43.54, now it's nowhere near to 5,000, but chugging a little bit. Silver up 270, that's over 4%. $70.66. Foreign exchange, it's a little interesting. The dollar's actually down a little bit with the euro up over 116 again. It was under that. British pound, 134.22. It was in the 133s. Japanese yen, with all the good news, is still over 160. 160.14, that's not good news for those guys. Crypto up 2,400, but 66.2000. You know, still way below the 100,000-hour top, but at 66, not any kind of real danger today to MicroStrategies and other places. A lot of stuff. Matt, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Yeah, just a little bit for you guys. It is 7:35 on June 15th, 2026. Let's go to weather real quick. 54 at O'Hare and 57 at Midway. Partly cloudy downtown tonight. A low of 59 and partly cloudy. Over to sports, of course. Yesterday, Chicago's MLB teams, Cubs lost to Giants 5-1. Cubs are 37 wins to 35 losses this season. White Sox won against Dodgers 6-4. White Sox are 38 wins to 32.
So, Matt, at the early in the year when the Dodgers saw themselves coming to Comiskey Park or Wrigley Field, do you think for a second they thought the Sox were going to be this good?
I don't think so. I think they wouldn't have played if they thought that. Cubs are back tonight with the Rockies, and Sox are back on Tuesday night with the Yankees. But meanwhile, the big news in the NBA, Saturday night, Knicks won the NBA Finals against the Spurs. Final score was 94-90. This marks their first NBA title since 1973.
What was the starting lineup of that team, Matt?
In 1973?
Yeah.
Gosh, I have no idea.
We'll see if Mr. Flanagan can name it after you're done.
For sure. Oh, yeah, I was curious, what were you doing back in 1973? Were you
watching
still in college?
Watching the game. I was still in college.
Probably still watching, yeah. All right, sounds good. Over to you.
John, what was the starting lineup?
I can't tell you, Tom. 73 has become a blur to me.
It would be Willis Reed, Dave DeBuscher. Who's the guy who was the senator? Went to Yale. That was his name. White guy. Was the other forward. And Earl Monroe and Clyde the Glide, Walt Frazier. Clyde was the other. I can't believe I can't remember that guy's name. He ended up being a senator.
Clyde Frazier, Willis Reed, Earl Monroe, Bill Brady, and Phil Jackson.
Bill Bradley, yeah. Phil Jackson was like their sixth man or the next big
Phil
guy.
Phil Jackson, right.
Well, he was in the.
Is that our Phil Jackson?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Morning, wow. Nancy.
Hi, Nance.
Good morning. How are you?
I saw Nance yesterday, John.
He did.
We had breakfast.
I told him we've gone over the limit. This is the second time in less than a year. I can't do this.
Less than 2 weeks.
Well, that's true, but, you know, my limit is a year.
What about John? You see him once, that's another. You can't do it for a year?
I haven't seen John yet, so we don't have the limit. We're on the zero meeting until... and the years are going by.
We'll turn the video on Zoom, Nancy. You'll see if you really want to meet with me or not.
Well, same thing here. But
how do you know that John didn't buy Dr. No's Island from the movie? He's been down there the whole time.
I don't. I don't know where John is. Where's John?
God.
We're going to go through this forever.
What was the World War II guy? The guy they were always looking. Where's
Private Ryan?
No. What was the name that was on the name was on every railroad car and everything? What the hell was it?
Is that a K? Was it?
Jim Lawler's right. He went to Princeton. He was a good ball player. He was a really good center. I thought. Anyway, so Kilroy was here.
Kilroy was here.
Yeah. All right. So Nance, we had a million questions earlier in the show. For you, so I'll let
you. Why didn't you call me?
Well, you can always pile in early. Jen and I are just arguing about stuff. We can always use you earlier.
Not what you said yesterday.
Well, you know, it's what I say something nice about Jen.
Yeah, I think you did.
Oh God,
it's a first. I wrote it down and lost the book.
I wasn't even being overserved or anything. I was, you know, whatever. So, but Jen, what were we talking? We were talking about entry level prices and stuff like that, and. You had some questions for
Nancy. Foreclosures and stuff.
Yeah. Foreclosures are up some. Is that, other than being a number in the paper, Nance, is that doing anything to anybody?
No, I don't think John, I hate to contradict, but if they're really, truly being foreclosed upon, I would be surprised because the people, I know people who are on their, oh my goodness, fourth, fifth round of getting extensions on their mortgages and getting it all added to the back end. It's just amazing to me what I'm seeing. So I think they're purposely trying to keep the foreclosures from happening right now. So if there's a real foreclosure going on, I mean, these people really have not paid in a very long time and they're not being modified. I think this is going to come to an end, but it's got to. I mean, they can't keep doing it forever.
It's a stupid question, sort of off topic, but just how stuff gets counted. My sister-in-law, she has a cousin I don't think I've ever met, but is one of the condos down in Florida. I mean, it's been a long time since the hurricane. She still can't get one of her building. They still haven't made a determination where they're going to fix it or wreck it, right? She's still paying her mortgage. You know, one of these days, she's going to say, screw it. Well, I don't know how much equity she's got in it. I guess if she, obviously enough to where she's still paying the mortgage. Now, if she says, screw it one of these days, does that count as a foreclosure? It must. I mean, are these foreclosures that John's talking about, are they central to people like the fires in L.A. that can't afford to rebuild, or Florida, or are they... Maybe you, Jack, and are they all over, or are they pockets of them?
Go ahead, John.
I don't think it's as, you know, the rates are as high here, say, as they are, say, in some of the Sun Belt places where stuff was, you know, overbuilt, you know, priced too high, and the carrying costs and everything else became impossible for people to keep up with. And I think that's a real reason why there's a lot of foreclosures, is because, you know, it isn't just so that the mortgage is unaffordable, but it's that everything else is competing for priority, and there's not enough money in anybody's pocket to keep that kind of game going with insurance and taxes on top of it. So I'd have to dig a little deeper to see, you know, where this typical foreclosure rise is occurring. I don't think it's Chicago, the Chicago area.
Well, I don't. But I think I really don't.
Same pressures, you know, that probably will eventually make it so that people just can't, you know, they're going to walk away. It's just not, they can't sustain it. Well, and for the long haul, it may look like, you know, they're screwed, because any place you go to is going to have the same unpredictable taxes and insurance, let alone what your mortgage is. So it's too much for them to take on.
What happened to all the people a year ago that we talked several shows in a row that couldn't handle the 30 or 35% increase in taxes? Were they all able to exit the house and sell it and go somewhere else? Or did that cause a lot of foreclosures or not? It doesn't sound like it did.
Are you talking about here?
Yeah.
No, it didn't cause foreclosures. Most of them sold because they've worked out.
So they were.
I mean, that's the only solution there is. If your taxes have gone up and you can't afford them anymore, the best thing you can do is just sell and get out.
And the prices have hung in there, so people were able to do that.
I suppose, because I haven't. There really, I don't know of a lot of foreclosures in Illinois right now. I really don't. In fact, the Illinois market is getting, you know, going up.
Which is interesting. It would not something you would guess, would you?
No, because we've talked about how the prices, the value of the homes have gone up, and I really believe once you drop out of the Chicago market, it's very hard to get back in. Very difficult to get back in the market.
Well, as John mentioned earlier, that a lot of that is due to the fact that we never had a California or Florida market to start with. So us going up like this, We're still not matching, you know, California or Florida, where they, you know, regular, would a house get up there to like 800 or 900? I mean, it was incredible, right? We never did that, did we? Well, now maybe we are now, but
no, we did not get. I don't even think we're that high now. I just think our starter homes used to be like 150. You know, they were 200, then 220, but actually now they're higher than that. I mean, we're looking at, to get anything decent, I think you're looking at between 280 and 325 on starters. You're going to go condo.
What would you consider, John and I were jousting about this earlier, what does a starter home look like? I mean, John, you give your version, and I mean, we're not talking about the frame bungalow on 50th Street that I was born in. I mean, I am.
I mean, the ones like, you know, they're just frame homes. They're, you know, they have three bedrooms, a kitchen, bathroom, and a living room. That's it.
Now, where would you place those? I mean,
well, they're in the older sections of, like, you know, that I know of in like Oak Lawn. They're in
hometown.
They're in Chicago, like on 79th Street, stuff like that. They're in Worth. I mean, they're out there. They're out there. The originals, you know, more like a starter home.
Okay.
They're in Bourbonnais. They're in, they're out there. They're all over the place.
But they're
they have competition in being bought by people who have, you know, are investors, and you buy them in cash and rent them out.
Is that kind of what your definition is too, Jen? It's sort of mine, I guess. Yeah.
And, I mean, if there's decent schools and, you know, amenities, shopping or whatever, that's a plus. And there's a lot of places with, you know, that don't have those things. And, you know, but, you know, if you're in an established place like Oak Lawn or you know, a city neighborhood, I worry about, you know, repair costs that are associated with a new home buyer who's, you know, got dreams of what they want the place to be. I think they have to start looking more carefully for things that they don't have to shell out a lot of money for once they buy, in order to redo a kitchen or, you know, expand or, you know, finish a basement or something else. I don't think that that's feasible for a lot of people starting out now. So they have to buy at a higher end than they ever thought maybe they would have to, because they don't have enough money to turn it into something more desirable. Whereas in the past, you could do that. You know, if you got the house cheaply enough, you could get them quite cheap in some cases. And it wasn't impossible or unaffordable to improve them. But that's kind of off the table, I think, for a lot of people now. Is that your impression too, Nancy? That people don't have a lot of room to dream about houses because they can't afford those dreams now.
I agree with that. But the starter home, I mean, people get into them and they can't afford to fix them up. They clean them, they paint them, you know, and they make do with what they have. They're just happy to be out of the apartment. So it's different. Now you have different classes of people, and I don't mean ethnic or anything like that. I just mean there's a certain class that just wants to get into a home and have a backyard, and that's it. Right? And everything else is just going to have to sit and wait, and that's it. The garages are filled with, you know, their storage things. They're just happy to be out of an apartment.
Well, it's
and that's it. And then John's describing, I think, more like the person who they've got, you know, three kids now, and it's just not big enough, and now they've saved some money and they're both working and they can afford more, so they want to move up. They're the ones that really can't afford to redo, because the first group can't afford anything. I mean, they're just glad to be out of the apartment rent.
Yeah.
And then the next one, then there's a class up, and then it goes from there. And by class, I just mean group of people.
Well, the
economically affordable.
You know what you're describing, the Bodie is, as they say in the South Side.
The boat of us.
It's like buying a used truck. Same thing. I mean, you're describing, if somebody goes and buys a place, say it's brick, it's sturdy, all those kinds of things, and so compared to 20 years ago, all right, what's the worst that could happen? I need an air conditioner, a roof I need to be done in a couple years, and I got to replace a few windows. By the way, the appliances look a little shabby. I'm going to say in the year 2008, you're talking a total of $4,000 or $5,000. Now you're probably talking 25.
Well, I've heard furnace and air conditioners are between 12 and 18.
Yeah.
On a regular home. I'm not talking about these ones that have two.
Yeah. And the roof and windows, what Audrey say last week? The windows are three times as much as they were 5 years ago.
I'm getting calls for replaced windows in the houses, and they're anywhere from 40 to 60,000.
Yeah, it's insane. I replaced most of the windows in my place, and I use this outfit. Remember the guys that the outfit shut them down on Goose Island, Jen? The guys.
Was Reliance or what?
Yeah.
Was
it? Well, they ended up, a lot of the guys from there found a place in this big, huge manufacturing building that was abandoned. They leased, you know, 10% of it, Is that 35th Street, 39th Street somewhere?
I remember, yeah, they started up again, right?
Yeah, they started up again, and I bought all the windows out there. And they were, you know, and I get some guys to put them in. But I'd go pick them up, and, you know, you go out with the measurements. They'd make them for you custom-made. And I'm going to say, you know, 800 hours a window, something like that. And then, you know, you got to pay guys to put it in. And when the last time I went out there, I wanted the big picture window in the one floor, and they wanted, like, $3,800, and I go, 3 years ago you did mine and they were $1,800. What are you doing? Well, that's what they cost now. Not to mention, you know, the guys that put them in and everything. I used to buy an old truck, and I go, all right, I'll drive it around. I'm pretty good at seeing what's wrong with it. All right, so I'm not going to pull the tires off. So let's say I need brakes. Let's say I need, you know, tune up and wires and stuff like that. Worst case, I need a transmission. So my top end of this whole mess is $3,000. And then I got a truck that's fixed up for me, you know. I mean, I didn't usually buy one like every 6 months or anything, but now I'm petrified of doing that. Transmission's what, $4,000? Brakes are going to be like $1,200 by themselves. What's a tune-up? Got, you know, an alternator is going to be $500. I mean, what are we talking about? And I still got an old truck. I mean, it's a you're not even, plus you can't say, get anybody to work at it. Well, I can take you in July, yeah, but it doesn't run today. I mean, it's
one thing I'm starting to see, and if it's a question, you know, between a house that's got a lot of work to be done and nobody can afford it in that price range to put all the money into it, the house just, you know, sits there, and it only becomes, you know, an interesting prospect for a developer. Who, this is happening all over my neighborhood. They're knocking the house down and building a far grander house than ever sat on that lot or on that block. And it immediately sells, and now you're in the street is gradually becoming a completely different kind of housing stock. And I think that's happening in any neighborhood that's got any pluses, like, you know, decent transportation, maybe a decent school, where people gladly come in and you know, rip the thing down and buy a brand new house. And it's, you know, again, far less affordable than the house that stood there for 100 years before that. And here's another neighborhood now that is being priced out of people at the bottom end of the market. So it's kind of sad that houses that could be fixer-uppers, if stuff was affordable and there were people who had the skill and the energy to turn them into something nicer, instead they have to surrender it to a developer, knock the thing down, and build something that,
well, how much of that
small slice of the population can afford.
How much of that, for question for both, how much of that, two people, one of them is a guy named Rob, I won't give his last name, he's a big developer, been forever, I see him at the AAA, he's at least an acquaintance, maybe a friend. Always remember one thing, Chief. A thing of plasterboard costs as much in a $1 million house as it does in a $100,000 house. Which, there's a lesson to be, there's a lesson there, right? I mean, how much you can put in a place that you can't sell for that much, because the cost to fix it up costs the same amount, right?
Well, I think what John's saying is that they're knocking these houses down. They're staying in the same footprint, but they're going up, and they're making so much more square footage that's why they can charge more. Well, and of course, people are attracted to it because it's, you know, it's got curb appeal.
But where is the money coming from? Which is John and my discussion. I won't say argument earlier. One day we had a down day like this a couple weeks ago. It's like this amount, 2% in the NASDAQ, and I went through the math in the stocks. I took the top 7 stocks that were down in the day. It was pushing $900 billion in market cap in one day. So I'm going to say today we're doing the flip side.
Okay.
This money is coming from people dying, basically, and giving their stock portfolios to their kids. You're not seeing that house that John's talking about. I'm not saying never. I mean, Audrey was on a week or two ago, and she was talking about the younger people that can actually afford the house are the people where, and this is grossly simplistic, the guy might have gone to 2 years of college, electrician, air conditioning guy. This is so sexist and so general. Wife might be a nurse. They've actually got some dough at age 32 to put down a down payment. Where the people I meet down here, they're working for, you know, the SIBO or someplace. They're making 65. their nut for their student loan is 100 or 80. They're not even anywhere close to being where the people Odd's talking about and you're talking about. There's no way that person is buying without stock from Daddy. That, oh, by the way, if Daddy bought it at $2 and it's now 200 and he croaks, you don't have to pay tax on the 198, which is really something. I'm not saying, you know, whatever. I'm not big on taxes, but you get that money home free. You're going to be so far ahead of some other guy, the guy's never going to catch you. And that's what we've done between tax laws and because of the wealth bubble. Now, again, today I'm happy as a clam for my clients. We're going to have a great day here today. So it's not like I'm not in this loop. I am, but at least I'm trying to recognize what's happening here. Where this money, where this wealth is coming from. And I'll bet you, and if you could go interview all the people who bought those places, especially if they're young, you're going to find out that somebody helped them out with the down payment. You're probably not going to say that somebody's working, making $400,000 a year on his own, saving $350,000. I don't think you're going to find that. Maybe you are, but I doubt it.
I doubt it, too.
I mean, I know the people who bought the place next door to me, it's the third time it's traded. It used to be owned by Black Jack McDowell, the pitcher of the Sox. And I get a load of this, Nance. You'll love this, or Audrey would for sure. I think he turned down $1.1 million bid for the place. I forget what era this was, but the market kind of went down a little bit. It might have been 2007. He ended up taking like $890,000. Okay. So this guy comes in, puts a boatload of money into it. His kids leave. His two adopted kids leave. And to make sure they never came back, they sold the house and got a small place. And I'm not saying that was the reason. This other guy comes in. He and his wife, she's on her second baby. They're young. They're living someplace. They remodel it for 6 months. They never even lived there. They pile in. They spend another $1 million on a place. And, you know, whatever. And I'm sure the kid's got a nice job, but all the money came from, I think somebody croaked and gave him the dough. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but we're talking about different classes of people here, aren't we, Jen and Nance? I mean,
yeah.
Pretty much.
I mean, he made his money the old-fashioned way. He inherited it, right? There's nothing wrong with that. Maybe I'm jealous. I don't know. But where are your rates? What are the people you're hunting for mortgages for now? I know, Nance, you're always talking about the taxes are a problem, and people are worried about money they have to put in the place because a lot of times they don't have any left after the closing. Is that still going on?
Pretty much. I mean, there are people buying homes. In fact, like for my client, I try to, you know, help them out and like, you know, say, you know, they wanted to know what movers to use, blah, blah, blah. And so I started calling movers for them, and most movers didn't even have open dates in June.
Wow.
So you're talking a lot of people moving, but then again, the kids are just out of school. So then you have to say to yourself, well, is this all buyers? But it doesn't mean it is. I mean, it could be renters, right? I mean, if you're going to move, June would be the month to do it in, because then you're resetting in July, and by August these kids are going back to school. So I you know, it made a lot of sense to me. I was just surprised when you call movers and they say, well, we only have one open date in June, so do you want it or not?
Well, maybe like, so many people, really? If it was like the old days, so many people are leaving Illinois by July, all the trucks are elsewhere.
I have no idea, but there were none in Indiana either.
Wow.
I was surprised. Indiana had, I found a mover, they had two dates open. And believe it or not, the movers in Indiana were more expensive than the movers in Illinois.
There's
something eye-opening.
Oh, really?
What is the rate? What is the rate for two guys in a truck these days per hour? It's got to be, what, it's 300?
I think it was 350.
350?
Yeah, 350 maybe.
Well, if they're decent, they're not going to wreck everything. It's probably not horrible.
Everything is just so much, you know, when we grew up, things were a certain price, but everything is just so eye-opening compared to how it used to be over the years. I mean, it's just so different now. And I don't even know how to describe it right now, but it's just absolutely amazing how expensive things have gotten. But now Did they really settle the thing with Iran? You were saying they did?
Well, there's supposedly a memorandum that is agreed to. It's going to be signed on Friday. We'll see if Israel tries to mess with it. I hope they don't. But it calls for the strait being open and stopping blockades of areas, and they're pushing the nuclear talks, for another 6 months, Jen, or something? I think they dropped the idea about getting the nuclear dust. I don't know what we'd have done with that anyway. I think they're pretty close, Jen. What do you think? I mean, I bet it ends.
You know, it'll be really interesting to see the impact at the G7 conference because of this. I think this is going to kind of shake things up. Maybe people assume by the time of this meeting something would be happening on the Iran front.
Why would the G7 summit? What are you saying would be what's going to be the interesting part about it?
Well, I think this really changes the power dynamic very much with the UK and the US and the Ukraine war. And, you know, I think there's going to be an attempt to settle that thing too, you know, given that we got Iran hopefully put away. But I think that there's going to be a
power change to who? For advantage to whom?
Well, the US is, you know, coming out of this stronger.
I don't buy that. But go ahead.
You do not buy that.
No,
time.
Absolutely not. Anyway, but
okay.
It's stronger than the UK.
Why we started a war.
The UK, a proportional weakening of Europe. You know, there's been kind of diddling around here, and pissing off everybody in their population, but I think the U.S. is sort of looking like it's got its act together compared to them.
Oh, boy. So.
Well, that just shows how far they've fallen, I think.
I don't know.
Opinion, Tom. It's okay to have. I mean, I just don't know what... that's why I'm questioning what exactly he's referring to, because, I mean, like it or not, I mean, Trump causes problems, but he's also... Does Iran have to give up the nuclear capability?
Yeah, but that was there all along, I think.
Yeah, I know. I just wondered if they agreed to it, or is that the 6 month
delay? That's the 6 month delay. I think in general, they've agreed to no bombs, right, John? I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about that. At least I hope not.
Because I mean, in that case, then you'd have to say he at least did a good job. He achieved the goal, and we're getting out.
Well. We also said when he bombed the place a while ago, you don't know. I think the idea of the nuclear enrichment, I mean, you need a certain amount of nuclear enrichment or you can't do MRIs, for God's sake, right?
I don't know.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
to be bombing us like they claimed, right? So we got that straightened out, right? And then is the Israel thing?
That's, what do you think, John, on that? That's a torch point here, isn't it? I don't think
they've been kind of the loose cannon in all of this, really. We'll see.
There's been
some pretty fierce words between Netanyahu and Trump, I think. So
you don't think he's actually going to torpedo it, do you, Netanyahu? Or he's going to some big attack this week?
I sure hope not.
Sure hope not too.
It kind of wrecks your good day, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, I, I